Well, good morning to yuns, as they say in Greenville, Tennessee. How are yuns? I never did. I remember the first time I heard that. I was we hadn't been in Tennessee long. We had moved here from a very sophisticated place called West Virginia, and we came down and went and quickly, you know, tried to make as many friends. Mom and Dad knew how important it was for us to meet some people, so we hooked up with the Wilhoit boys, and I remember going over to their house and just a wonderful mother, Wanda, and she said, "Well, how are yuns?" And I said, you know, first time that had ever hit my ears. And I said, "Well, I assume she's talking about how are we?" And I said, "Well, we're great. Thank you." So that was an introduction to, what do you call that, a colloquialism? You know, things that, slang, I guess, that people use in certain areas. And I think that's what is endearing about East Tennessee. There's a lot of slang here. People come. I remember going to see my cousins in California, and then they'd come over and see me, and they just get their little giggles in because of the way I talk. I'd go out to Southern California and go visit with my cousin, some of his friends, and they would say something so we can hear you. You know, I just thought that was very condescending. But I guess at least I could be thankful for being the center of attention, right? Well, speaking of center of attention, Abby and I went out yesterday, day before yesterday, to get some food for her kids at Wendy's. Remember when Wendy's was a place you could actually go inside and eat and order food and stuff? Well, maybe you can still do that at your Wendy's, but not at our Wendy's. You can't go inside. They have converted to the PALS model, which is nothing but a drive-through, at least the one in Greenville. Now, I don't mind that so much, except when they don't have their process down as good as PALS. You know, PALS can process customers a lot faster than most drive-thrus, and it's the way it's designed. It's the way Tom Crosby and Pal Barker and all of their managers refined the process in order to make it a lot faster and more accurate. So we sat and sat. At least we were sitting in her brand-new Ford Bronco. Yes, Abby's Bronco finally came in. It was ordered a year ago July. So not this past July, the July before that. Does that make sense now? Well, it finally came in along with three other Broncos, which we promptly sold. So she's tickled. It's a manual transmission. Nah, don't ask me why. But it's a manual transmission, two-door. She's got two kids that have to go in the back seat. Don't ask me why about that either. Black. Don't ask me why. But she wanted something that was just rugged, and she just is tickled to death. And I drove it. It drives good. It's, you can't get the 7-speed manual transmission with the big engine, the 2.7-liter V6. You have to get the 2.3-liter four-cylinder. From a power standpoint, it's totally adequate. It just sounds very weak. You know, it just doesn't make the right music, as we say in the car business. Speaking of making the right music, I had to get the valves adjusted on my recent acquisition, 1966 Fastback Mustang with a high-performance 289. It's called a K code. If anybody ever says, is it an A code, a C code, or a K code? All of those mean something. The K code is the high performance engine. Matter of fact, it is the engine that Carroll Shelby decided to beef up for his Cobra and also to beef up for the Shelby GT350 back in 65 and 66, which was a. Today, those cars are $300,000, somewhere in that neighborhood for a Concours edition. Can you imagine? This Mustang that I bought, value can go anywhere from low 20s to up to 85,000. I paid mid 60s for it and thought I'd done really good because it is a Concours restoration. Has a few flaws, one of which was it wasn't making the right music. It was ticking just a little bit. When I got it, I had one of my main Mustang guy. He's the Ford guy. 289 V8 is his thing. And I said, Charlie, what do you think about this? He said, needs the valves adjusted. I said, well, let's get to adjusting then. So he adjusted the valves. Turned out the rocker arms were just a little bit worn out, so it's kind of hard to adjust the valves if your rockers are worn out. So we got new rockers, and it's just rocking on right now, just doing a great job, making the right tunes coming out the exhaust pipe and doesn't go clickety-clack under the hood. Not always a good thing when they're doing that. When you hear that clicking or tapping noise in your engine, usually something's going wrong in the head of the engine, something with the valves. If you put your foot on the gas and rev it up and it kind of has a knocking noise, sounds a little deeper in the engine, that is even more serious. You know, it's not too hard to do valve work on an engine. Of course, you got to take the valves, you got to take the heads off and have them reworked by a professional engine shop. It's not cheap, but it's not like having, you know, a problem in the low end like, you know, a rod knock. You ever heard of a rod knock? Well, that's where the rod bearings, and which what the rod spins on the crankshaft is, they got a problem. They're either loose or they're slipping, and they're worn out. And then you have to do a complete engine rebuild, which not fun, kind of expensive. On a 289, you're probably looking anywhere from $3,500 to $5,500 to do that little operation. So I don't have to do that on mine, thank goodness. So anyway, I kind of wandered there. I could do that sometimes. The drive-through experience at Wendy's was not good. They're just not there yet, you know, from a level of sophistication. You'd think that after all these years of drive-throughs, ever since Kirby's Pig Stand in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, opened up a drive-through, in 1921, the story goes. So, yeah, you would think McDonald's was first, but McDonald's wasn't really around. Some people say that A&W Root Beer opened up their the first drive-through was in 1920. But I don't know. There's still some dispute as to whether that happened. That was A&W in Sacramento, California, by the way. Drive-thrus are popular. You think they're going to get more popular? You know, as people get less patient and don't like waiting. There's been a lot of different things that they tried to convert to drive-thrus. Banks have worked pretty good. The first bank was supposedly the Exchange National Bank of Chicago. That occurred on November 12th, 1946. How's that for some obscure information? However, there's a Texas, you know, everything is big in Texas and first. And they say no. The first drive-through was in the 1920s. I guess they were driving through with Model Ts at the Hillcrest State Bank in Dallas back in the 20s. So, I don't know. We won't settle that today. But drive-throughs have been popular in, for many different things. Drive-through grocery stores. Some of those still exist. Drive-through liquor stores. Drive-through dry cleaners. My dry cleaners is almost a drive-through. You still have to get out, but they have a sliding glass door. You drive under the canopy and then throw it at them and then make your escape. But a lot of drop-off and pickups. Everything from Walgreens to these grocery stores where you order and you go pick up your food. You guys do that? I don't want anybody else picking up out my bananas. You know, I just got this certain shade of yellow green that I know that that's where I want them. And my apples, I'm real picky about apples. Now, you know, when it comes to my Opera Cream cookies or my Nature Valley bars, you know, soap and dishwashing deterrent, who cares about that kind of stuff? My wife orders a lot of that from Amazon, unfortunately. But you know, I'm just not much into that. But, I mean, just you think about all the experiences that you have had in drive-thrus. Just think of the number of wheels that could have been saved, the sheer dollars of wheels that could have been saved if they didn't have drive-thrus, because that's where most of them get curbed. And we do a lot of wheel repair. Just about every new vehicle that comes in has wheel damage, or trade-in, I should say. Now, not so much trucks, but a lot of cars do. And you know why that is? That's because wheels are now the outermost extremity on a lot of cars because of the low-profile tires. Used to, tires were really nice and fat and stuck out about an inch or inch and a half further than the side of the wheel. And so you just didn't, you know, you got tires, got a little rash on them and scuffed, but that didn't really hurt the tire that much. It was the wheel that was the thing that they were concerned about. Well, they're not concerned about that anymore, and you see a lot of that. If you happen to have a wheel that is damaged, don't go out and buy a new wheel before you call me. I've got a company that comes around and does wheel repair, and they do it right out here on the lot. I mean, they don't even take it inside the shop unless it's raining, but they are amazing what they can do. Now, they can't fix every single kind of wheel, but about 90% of them they can fix. So if you get a little of that curb rash before your husband sees it or your wife sees it, then, you know, you can give me a call, 423-552-2020, and I can maybe even send them to your house and have them come do it in your driveway or at your place of work, or if you want to just come down and visit me at Gateway, then we can chat while they're fixing your wheels. How's that sound? Well, let's take our first break, and we'll be back in just a minute. Okay, I am back, the car guru, Lenny Lawson, here at Gateway Ford and Gateway Nissan of Greenville, Tennessee. I say that to give me a little of credibility. I am a real live new car dealer with a twist. I do tell it like it is. I've been doing this for a lot of years now, like 20 plus. And, you know, this is kind of a mission of mine to help people make good decisions when it comes to buying, selling, trading, or doing this, dealing with an insurance adjuster. You know, insurance adjusters are people too, and they have an unenviable job that I don't think most people would be able to handle. I respect insurance adjusters. They are dealing with people who are not happy. They have been in an accident. They have wrecked their baby doll or their favorite car that they even have. You know, some people name their cars. I've never done that. But old Bessie out there, you know, they've put scratches on it or the fender's knocked in or, you know, or worse. A lot of people have totaled their cars. Doesn't take much to total a car anymore. Not when headlight assemblies cost $4,500 per side. No, doesn't take much to total a car. Or when all the airbags go off. You know, if all the airbags go off, it's been a pretty serious accident. And so the insurance adjuster is there to represent the company, not you, the company. They hold the purse strings to your claim. And so the adjuster's job is to get you to settle your claim, get your car fixed, get you on the road. Absolutely. They want you to be happy, and they want you to maintain your insurance with Farm Bureau or State Farm or whoever. They want you to stick with them. So if you had a bad claims experience, then you might not. So they have a customer service responsibility. But they also want to spend as little money as possible. They want the auto repair shop to fix your car in the most expedient, that's fast, and let's say high quality way, but they don't want to spend a whole lot of money to do it. For example, let's say that you wrecked your let's say that you got hit in the door and you have to replace your doors. Let's say it got into the quarter panel a little bit. And so it requires some paint blending. You didn't get the front door. You just got the back door and the rear quarter. Fender's fine. No need to paint those, right? Well, if you have certain kinds of paint, it's going to have a hard time matching. If it's got any metallic like a silver or a gray, certain whites, especially the tri-coat whites, they are very difficult to make the paint match. And many times they have to blend over onto the door or paint the whole side. Well, the insurance company doesn't want to do that. They just want to fix your door and your quarter panel, but you want your paint to match. So sometimes there is a slight conflict of interest. My first recommendation is my usual recommendation when it comes to dealing with people in the car business, especially when it comes to service, warranty, insurance adjusters, body shops. Don't get mad. Keep your emotions in check. You can get what you want But you don't have to be ugly about it. And I'm not. I'm sorry if I'm offending you, but that's just the truth. That's human nature. People don't like to be yelled at. People don't like to be accused of being something that they are not. You know, when they were raised, their mama said they were good little boys. And then you're telling them that they're lying, cheating, you know what's. So it's important that you, you know, don't offend first. You get off on the wrong foot. If you've totaled your car, you may think that your car is worth $25,000 and the insurance company offers you $18,000. And so your first question is, if you don't mind my asking, Mr. Adjuster, what are you basing that offer on? And most of the time they're going to say, well, we're basing it on an average of comparable vehicles. And so I'd like to see your comparable vehicles that you're talking about. You know, in many cases, this is when you pick up the phone and you call me. I can help you with this type of situation. I will tell you what I think your car is worth because that's what I would pay for it and what you should be able to expect. You know, if it's a late model car, for example, let's say that it's you've had it for 3 months and you have a pretty significant accident. One of my concerns, if I were you, is going to be, well, if I trade this thing in 2 years like I normally do, how's this going to impact the value of my car? Well, it's not going to help it. You know, one of the things you want to do is take pictures of it, at least if it's a minor accident. If it's a major accident, you may not want to, but you should. And keep a copy of the estimate so whoever's buying your car knows what's going on. Folks, you can't hide it. I mean, it's going to be on Carfax. It's going to be on AutoCheck. Any used car appraiser worth his salt is going to be able to tell that your car has been damaged, and they're going to ask you. And if you lie to them and they find out differently, then that's not going to go over well when it comes to your trade appraisal. Now, sure, I mean, you can just go to another dealership somewhere. Maybe they'll give you more. Maybe they're not as attentive and really looking. Or you can call Carvana or one of these places where you can shop your car online. But they're going to ask you if it's ever been wrecked, and they're going to pull a Carfax. They're going to see it as well. So it's really kind of hard to hide. So what you want to know from the insurance company is, will they pay you for diminished value? And that's an important phrase, diminished value. That means how much did your car go down in value because it's wrecked, because it's now going to be wrecked. Are you entitled to diminished value? Well, some insurance companies say no. So I would ask that when I buy an insurance policy, I'm going to ask them. And I did for my cars at Gateway. I said, if my car is wrecked or any of my cars wrecked, I'm going to ask for diminished value. And they say, well, that's fine because, you know, it did go down in value. But a lot of insurance companies say, nay, no diminished value. So ask. You might want to change your insurance carriers if they don't offer that. But if they offer you $18,000 for a $25,000 car, you want to know what the comps are. And go after your own comps. Go online, see what cars like yours are selling for, or what people are asking for them. That's good evidence, right? If you can print out four or five vehicles that were similar to yours, similar miles, similar condition, similar equipment, you know, you can't compare your, you know, non-sunroof, non-leather, non-four-wheel drive vehicle to one that has all of that stuff. You've got to be comparing apples and apples. I know you know that, but I just had to say it because there's some people that would not know that. But remember, it only takes two vehicles to make an average. So you could find two pretty high examples and say, well, these are my examples. And my examples show me my car is worth $25,000. If you've got evidence, you'll get a different offer. Okay, so just make sure that you get your evidence. If you need help with this type of situation, get your facts together. Let me know what's going on. I might need some pictures and stuff, but send it to me. You can text it. My cell phone is 423-552-2020. It's amazing how many people listen to this radio show, but they'll still call the dealership and leave a message on my voicemail at the dealership, which I am not real prudent about checking. So please, use my cell phone. I'm not going to put it on the air in the Tri-Cities if I don't intend people to use it. So just get over your politeness and just wear me out. Let's take our last break and be back here in just a second. Yeah, while I was on the break, I was looking at the 66 Mustang that I have, the Fastback K-Code. Let's say I take it out, and I'm driving out to Rogersville Road and really enjoying the curves. And here comes this rock truck on my side. Now, am I going to hit the rock truck, or am I going to take out the fence row? Probably going to take out the fence row. So I'm talking to an adjuster, and he says, well, I've looked at comps for 66 Mustangs, and, you know, they're in the $12,000 to $13,000 range. And I said, sir, you're not looking at the right comps. So I go to Haggerty.com, and in fair condition, number four car is worth $29,500. Number three car is $47,000. Number two car, which is excellent condition, is $57,200. And a number one Concours car is $81,400. And, sir, if you will read the description of a Concours car and then look at mine, you will see that that's what mine is, $81,400, and that's what I'd like a check for, if you don't mind. So there would be a negotiation. They might want to know what I paid for it, and if they ask me that question, I'd say, well, sir, you didn't help me pay for it, and that's really not any of your concern. What you need to concern yourself with, and I'm saying this in a nice way, is what would it cost to replace my car? And that's all that matters. You know, it doesn't matter what I paid for it. And he's going to acquiesce and write me a check. So you just have to stand your ground in a nice but not overly defensive way, but at least use logic, right? Use logic. And most of the time, and be polite, and I think you'll win most of the time. Well, this is the kind of stuff we talk about on My Car Guru. If you've got any other people in your fam or friends and relatives and neighbors that are lost out there in automobile world and they're trying to think about, gosh, I got to buy a new car, but I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. Or I'm having engine problems, or I've got this or that going on with my car. Or what do I really need to change my oil every 5,000 miles? Do I need to go to a Jiffy Lube? You know, we try to provide those answers on this radio show. And we don't get to everything, that's for sure. But we do, if you know, you've got direct access, you can call me. You can send me an email, LennyLawson2020@gmail.com. That's LENNIE. Don't know why my mom spelled it that way, because a lot of people spell it with a Y, but it's LENNIE LEWSON 2020@gmail.com, or you can send me a text or call me at 423-552-2020. And that's all I have for you today, and we'll see you tomorrow.